hope everyone enjoyed their lunch. I thought it was very pleasant, and obviously the venue is absolutely beautiful. The grounds and the surrounding area are absolutely stunning. But let's get things underway. Our next guest speaker is someone who is internationally famous. She is famous for defending the truth and defending the rights of others who seek the truth. This lady has stood bravely and tirelessly against anti-free speech laws, not just here in the UK, but in other European countries. She has dedicated the last two decades of her life fighting to protect the rights and liberties of those who wish to question certain things that happened at a certain point in history. In some countries, you can go to jail for this, for simply questioning numbers and disputing things that have no real factual basis other than very, very spurious eyewitness testimony. You can go to jail for the best part of a decade. But the lady we have speaking next has stood up against this tyranny. She has herself been arrested and faced arrest, and she has never backed down or bowed her head, regardless of the personal cost that she has faced. This woman is a personal friend of mine. She is a very well-known nationalist. She is loved both here and on the continent. Please give a very warm welcome to Lady Michelle Renouf.
Thank you, Mark, Laura, and Sven for inviting me. And here we are among friends. Now, I want to say to you apropos that my late first husband was a medical doctor. He was a psychiatrist and a Gentile psychoanalyst. He concluded, after decades in the field, that the only cure for depression is to be in one's own right company. So thankfully, I have to say today, that surely we are, with patriotic alternative, absolutely in our right country, and in our right country, and in our right people. So I must say, it makes me feel good, and clearly it makes you feel good. So, because I've got allotted minutes and I'm inclined to ad lib extravagantly, I'll constrain myself by reading a tightly worded paper ending with a short video. Nowadays, the commitment to one's own racial people is slandered as an intention to despise, devalue, and fight other people's. But this describes chauvinism, which is the exclusionary opposite of nationalism. Those who feel naturally connected to their own people respect every other people's national feeling. The chauvinist, however, devalues any other people and considers only his own to be chosen or worthy. Similarly, the deluded anti-race, so-called borderless international citizen, has been swindled into taking up this rigid view as indisputable to batter all peoples with it, to cancel all rational opposition to a raceless, graceless, first names only globalism. So I bring neurological proof that racial nationalism cannot be cancelled. It accords unconsciously with human nature. It's hardwired. into every newborn. Apropos, my talk today is dedicated to toddler Sophia and to newborn Catherine and their generation. When congratulating Laura on their newborn, we got chatting about when a baby smiles. I offered what I had learned about why only a human newborn smiles. When reading for a postgraduate MA degree at the University of London in the new field in 2000 called the psychology of religion. There I learnt about four Scottish object relations theorists. They were the smarter, independent psychoanalysts, in my view, who rejected Freud's neurotic, Jewish-oriented theories. These object relations savvy Scotsmen identified the mirror mechanism. Germans call it the Spiegel Neuronen. You have a special instinct, hardwired, unconscious, in your neurological system. Its function is to reflect the feelings, the mood of another human, in your own mind. We do this unconsciously. When a mother smiles at her newborn baby, this triggers in her infant a mirrored response, during which the newborn learns to see himself, herself, as pleasing. In turn, this pleases the mother, and a programmed bond is activated. As the infant develops, he/she transfers some of this object relating to a special toy, a special object identified as belonging only to himself or herself. This identification extends to infant bonding with its nursery environs, with other family members, to the family's wider circle, to the nature around, and to the geographical horizon of its native homeland. Is this not authentic, original, the origin of nationalism? Surely this is how racial nationalism evolved, from our newborn nature's mirror neurons. It begins with a biologically unconscious feeling of familiarity in the newborn through eye contact with the mother. Then finally, the human being consciously transfers this familiarity to the entire spiritual space of common understanding, the common understanding that we are sharing today. In the brain, the language center is adjacent and possibly partly identical to the mirror neuron system. Along with the same language outside as at home, the infant identifies with its own mirrored, racially mirrored people. An expectation of bonding is fundamentally decisive for the functioning and characteristics of cooperative behavior among those whom we encounter. Might this intuitive mirror mechanism, in fact, be nature's mechanism to extend our neurologically unconscious bonding from mother to motherland? A collective unconsciousness, an intuitive attachment. I think we feel an intuitive attachment. Nationalism, therefore, is a biopolitical concept. It's real. It exists. Belief in one's own people is a commitment to one's ancestral continuity, in gratitude for our forebears. Nature bonds us to our racial communities. It prompts duty, pride in, and appreciation for loyal service. There is a feel-good willingness when common sense reflects our coordination in the interests of the common weal. Until attempts of anti-national powers, the amoral neo-liberalist, the anti-Gentile globalist, to abolish peoples. The ethnic concept of people was a self-evident consciousness in all peoples. In short, the spontaneous feeling of attachment to one's race is a natural emotion with unconscious neobiological roots. It's why I feel what you feel. Why I feel what you feel. Nothing can prevent it. That's the way it is, biologically. Yawning is contagious. A smile makes us happy. The explanation of these mysterious phenomena lies in the mirror neurons, which have only recently been explored. They are the source of our emotional intelligence. The way we humans know I am, because you know I am. They determine our gut feeling, our ability to love, and to distinguish between the genuinely giving, compassionate gene and the getting, egoistic gene. Our British poet, Rudyard Kipling, in 1908, intuitively resonates this new science of psychoneurology in his poem, The Stranger. The stranger within my gate, he may be true or kind, but he does not talk my talk. He cannot feel my mind. I see the face and the eyes and the mouth, but not the soul behind. The stranger within my gates, he may be evil or good, but I cannot tell what powers control, what reasons sway his mood, nor when gods of his far-off land shall repossess his blood. End quote. Recall, as we did today earlier, Enoch Powell noted that in the early 1950s, there were fewer than 100,000 non-whites in Britain, a mere few decades of racially and thereby culturally unrelated guest immigrants, as compared to multi-millennia of authentic grassroots racially indigenous whites. So turning directly to the disaster of mass immigration. If the original European community is damaged by the targeted infiltration of racially foreign peoples, loyalty to the host culture and peace within an overburdened economy can hardly be maintained. Moreover, the delusional feel-good of a bound, borderless world aims to depreciate our human homing pigeon instinct. The flight trajectory of virtual lifestyle and slick social media not only seeks to limit, but ultimately to eliminate live human interaction, but also to impoverish by casting aside the culturally accrued, subtle, refined, differentiated relationships to leave us ungrounded among fake photoshopped identities and a first name only superficiality. In words so applicable to the European people's virtue-signaling collaboration in their racial replacement within ancient territories, the Shakespearean scholar, Professor Peter Alexander, said in 1960 that at the heart of King Lear, quote, to see the virtues struggling in a world where their very virtue is the cause of their undoing is to be aware of tragedy, end quote. So I raise a brief vignette to illustrate. In the lead up to Brexit, I attended a huge conference televised by Sky TV, given by the Bruges Group, the high-profile anti-EU outfit. First out of the start gate at question time, I countered that Brexit was not just about business. That's all they spoke of. I held up the EU maps gleaned from the official EU website. Wiped off these EU maps are all European nation names, no longer England, Scotland, France, Italy, etc., and historic borders. These are replaced, as we will be, with new imagined regions, so that, to quote the website, aliens coming into Europe will not feel alienated by all its ancient national heritage. My question to that panel, why is the Bruges Group ignoring the intentions indicated on these EU maps, which show how the white European race, along with its classical inheritance, are likewise to be erased through a conquest by non-European mass immigration? No response from the panel, it won't surprise you. Only afterwards from the chairman, who told me that for raising the word race and embarrassing the Bruges Group in front of Sky News, I would never be welcome there again. I think pariah and is only a black Nigerian economist dared come up to my defense. He said that if he could speak up for his black race, why should she be a pariah for speaking up for her white race? It turned out this Nigerian felt gratitude for the white race because it brought Christianity to Nigeria. But alas, his was the oxymoronic Christian Zionism. At any critique of Israel, he grew savage. It balked any way to inform him that the great hero of the African peoples was its late great Libyan guide, Colonel Gaddafi. In effect, a national socialist who really raised the independent economic well-being of all of his people. I know, because I was there in 2011, speaking at an academy in Tripoli. I saw the gratitude for his leadership, admiration for his world's greatest irrigation enterprise. There I spoke to Colonel Gaddafi. He planned to bring me back in a month to prepare a UN resolution, as it happens, about my Birabijan campaign. During that month, the Allies, the all liars, as Richard Edmonds so wisely quipped, fomented civil war and ultimately the barbaric murder of this role model, he who had driven out the meddling USA and the UN from Libya 42 years earlier, he who had proceeded to bring about Libya's monetary independence. Indeed, a hero for European people. For Gaddafi warned the UN and the EU that if they failed to help him keep out marauders from Chad, mass migrating through Libya to invade Italy, to quote him, Europe would turn black. On video, I now present a way out of the immigration disaster, the migration disaster, as conceived by a retired German molecular biologist, Dr. Günter Kuemmel, K-U-M-E-L. He told his viable concept to international guests at my informal nationalist clubhouse in Germany. In turn, I present his concept to you, all thanks to technician Anthony Avery, who, given only my voiceover, has created this short video for you. So, please. So, can you dim the lights? Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the way out of the migration disaster. It is vital for our survival to eradicate poverty in the world. If we wait too long, poverty, migration, and population explosion in the primitive world will destroy our nations. So we commence with the original Sachs plan. Back in 2000, Professor Jeffrey Sachs, the American economist, recognized worldwide as the most knowledgeable expert on poverty and development, proposed a workable solution to end world poverty within 20 years. He identified the factors that can prevent poor economies from growing sufficiently. These factors might be geographical conditions, climate, issues of agriculture, access to seaports, transport problems, war, sanctions, trade barriers. Other factors are overpopulation, diseases, governance and state failure, lack of export goods, education and skills training. After decades of preparatory work, Professor Sachs led 20 expert groups to draw up holistic detailed analyses for each poor country, namely detailed diagnosis and precise corrective action, investment, financial, donor, administrative framework plans. The imaginative results were endorsed as an instrument of the United Nations in its Millennium Programme as the Sachs Plan. Most of the world's 195 countries signed up to this practical solution to end the danger, in fact the danger to us all, of unresolved world poverty. The wealthy countries committed to transfer a share of the GDP to poorer countries for 20 years. Yet after these 20 years, during which world war poverty could have been solved, the agreements have not been enforced. How is third world poverty a danger also to the first world? Not only refugees caused by profiteers' wars, the orchestrated caravans, and poverty, but also uncontrolled birth rate are the main causes for mass migration. Worryingly, this invasion, this conquest by immigration, is from unproductive countries seeking first and only to occupy productive white race developed countries. This is key. The Sachs Plan remains a legally binding obligation by almost all the 195 countries to their UN commitments. Professor Sachs, top expert on sustainable economic development, centered his plan on what he called the poverty trap, whereby poorer countries simply cannot enable and maintain stable methods of ensuring their populations can prosper. It is known that much overseas aid is misused. It never reaches the intended needy. Why does immigration not solve the problem of global poverty? According to the World Bank, 3 billion people live on less than $2 a day. Almost one in two people, that's half, isn't it, in the world. Four-fifths of all people have to get by on less than $10 a day. World poverty is a gigantic problem, but it is unchanged by a few millions invading Europe. Moreover, the population of the poorest countries is growing by 80 million a year. even if we could take in and feed 80 million every year, absolutely nothing would change for the better in the migrants' home countries.
This gumball represents the 1 million legal immigrants that the United States has taken every year on average since 1990. Now, who in the world deserves our humanitarian compassion? The World Bank has one measure of the desperately poor of the world. They make less than $2 a day. And how many people make less than $2 a day in the world? Well, let's start with Africa. In Africa alone, there are 650 million people who make less than $2 a day. 650 million. And in India, another 890 million people, desperately poor. China adds another 480 million people, making less than $2 a day. And unfortunately, the rest of Asia has a heartbreaking 810 million people who the World Bank says make less than $2 a day. And finally, there's 105 million of Latin America's population that are desperately poor. All told, the World Bank says there are 3 billion people in the world, 3 billion people who are desperately poor, making less than $2 a day. That's 3,000 gumballs. And every year, we take a million and suggest that we've somehow made a humanitarian difference. Of course, we don't pull our immigrants from these desperately poor populations, do we? These people are too poor, too sick, too disconnected to make it here as immigrants. We tend to pull our immigrants out of the better off poor of the world. And Mexico tends to define the type of immigrant that we bring here because the plurality of people come from Mexico. And Mexico is poor. How many people in the world live in countries that have average incomes lower than that of Mexico? And the World Bank tells us that that number is these 3 billion plus another 2.6 billion people. 5.6 billion people in the world who live in countries with average incomes below that of Mexico. That's 5,600 gumballs. And so what is it that the elites are telling us? They're telling us that when we take this 1 million immigrants, that we somehow or another are tackling world poverty. Double our immigration to 2 million a year, we couldn't make a noticeable difference. And we may be really hurting the impoverished people of the world, because the million that we do take are among the most energetic, often the better educated, certainly the most dissatisfied people that if they did not immigrate would be the agents for change to improve the lot of all the people in these countries. The true heroes in the global humanitarian field are the people in these countries who have the wherewithal to immigrate to another country, but instead stay in their countries to apply their skills to help their fellow countrymen. Unfortunately, our immigration system tends to entice these very type of people to abandon their countrymen. The impossibility of making even a dent is actually worse than it looks here, because last year, when we took 1 million immigrants, these countries added, births over deaths, 80 million more people into the impoverished population. And this year, Congress is bringing in 1 million legal immigrants. And this year, according to the United Nations, these countries are expected to add another 80 million people. And next year, you can be quite sure that Congress will bring in another 1 million immigrants. And these countries, unfortunately, will be adding another 80 million people into these impoverished nations. We could take 5 million a year, but we'd never get ahead of what's happening in these countries. Not in this century. Don't you see? Immigration can never be an effective or significant way to deal with the suffering people of the world. they have to be helped where they live. 99.9% of them will never be able to immigrate to a rich country. There's no hope for that. They have to bloom where they're planted. The only place that 99.9% of these people can be helped is where they live. Let's help them there.
Population explosion is one of the main causes of the poverty trap. Historic Europe will not survive if the population explosion in Africa mass migrates and continues unchecked. Every week, Africa's population increases by 1 million. Should Europe take in, say, 1 million Africans a week? And even if this were possible, nothing would change in the countries of Africa as a result. In a few decades, Africa will grow from its current population of 1 billion to 5 billion, and no national border controls will prevail. So we are not helping by tolerating mass migration. Turning now to how to remedy this inaction. Dr. Günter Kömmel is a retired German molecular biologist. He proposes a modified Sachs plan, a workable, do-good, feel-good concept which makes things achievable because it calls upon the attractive principle of give and take. Honoring the obligation must be made attractive to the payers. We do this according to the principle of give and take. The unwilling donors are invited to honor their pledge, but with the conditions stated in this modified concept. Surely it can be expected that the donor states will prefer to make actual the promised payment if they also are offered something in return. The modified Sachs plan is indeed a concrete and feasible political concept, cost neutral, that can simultaneously achieve several seemingly utopian goals. One, the return migration of migrants who are culturally and geographically totally alien. Two, the normalization of a threatening birth rate in the non-industrial world. Three, the end of poverty migration. Four, effectively the raising of poorest countries to the level of an emerging economy. There are equally important benefits to the migrants. They regain their own country, their culture and grassroots, and together we erase poverty and build up racial pride, land identity, and racial communal resolve to act for the betterment of one's native homeland. The secretly or openly migration-skeptical governments might well take to the new idea. Why? Because now they can demand re-migration as a mutually humanitarian concept. This concept would return us to our authentic race-related cultures in accord with nature's own fauna and flora master plan. And if the people, all the peoples, learnt about the new possibility of re-migration, they might take their hands out of their pocket and steamroll their governments. In particular, the governments of the EU skeptical states must get to know and adopt the modified plan. One imagines Orban, Salvini, Farage, and the bold Romanian MEP Christian Tehes, the politicians from Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Croatia, would officially introduce the modified plan to the European Union. After all, they have all signed up to the original Sachs plan. The migrants are relatively wealthier ones from not hopelessly poor countries with a pioneering spirit. Even a few better educated ones are among them. This means the more able and established of their citizenry are fleeing to abandon those left behind. They are precisely those whom the sending countries can in no way do without. So mass migration actually increases the needy in the world. The modified concept is formulated here as a prompt for widespread social media discussion and international adoption. In the UK, patriotic, political, traditional, cultural, and genuine conservation groups will wish to take an active interest. those who have connections to movers and shakers must urge them to foresee the immense political voting empowerment to be had for politicians who endorse the public relations enthusiasm for this modified Sachs strategy. Once this popular, truly mutually humanitarian rejuvenation is underway, the overthrow of the initially targeted white race extinction plan becomes possible. A borderless world is a wrong concept from the start. Many short-term thinking citizens believe mass immigration helps the incomers, but who is actually helped by it? The countries receiving mass immigrants cannot finance the admission of millions of destitute people. According to Professor B. Raffelhuizen, the 1 million refugees cost the German taxpayers 450 billion euros, that is 450,000 euros per capita. The costs for 4 million would be thus about as high as the entire ruinously high national debt. Social peace is endangered by disaffected youths and rootless parallel societies and crime. For example, already in 2017, according to German police crime statistics, there are 50 criminal immigrants for every one criminal immigrant with a German passport. In the sending countries, on the other hand, skilled labor is urgently needed to build up their abandoned homelands. So it becomes all the more urgent that the better educated migrants return to help those in dire need in their native lands. And the economic migrants themselves. Materially, they may be better off in white lands than at home, but they lose the only things they bring with them, language and culture. They lose their home and identity, their heritage and destiny, they become rootless or self-ghettoed. Migration does not solve a single psychological problem, benefits no one, harms everyone. If the United Kingdom and Europe, together with all white nations, are to survive this race-eliminating onslaught, poverty migration must be stopped and reversed. Who are the migrants making the journeys to wealthier countries? Years ago, we spoke of refugees and asylum seekers. Refugees from a war seek shelter in neighboring countries. An asylum can only be expected for a politically persecuted person who did not pass their first safe country. Therefore, it is clear that not a single migrant from remote countries should be allowed to enter distant regions of Europe, the UK, or its former colonial territories. Why should the modified plan work when other foreign development aid fails? If a state does not credibly or reliably accept these necessary repatriation conditions, this disqualifies it from being a recipient of aid. Since the countries of the world have committed themselves to the Sachs contract, the citizens can and must now demand and enforce its implementation from those countries under contract, but under the aforesaid conditions favorable to all. Once there is bold talk or a plan for re-migration, the intimidated silent majority will take it up. People themselves will advocate the plan with irresistible force and send governments out of office if they do not comply. The people can force the government from below to implement the Sachs concept. Broad circles will support the concept for mutually humanitarian reasons, given the chance to be relieved of the invaders and thus preserve all races in their geo-related places. How much will this cost us to implement the concept? In Germany, an annual contribution of 0.7% of GDP is actually not a high price, 200 to 300 euros per year per EU citizen. Under the terms of the modified Sachs plan, the migrants return home. For example, Germany already transfers 30 to 50 billion a year abroad, mostly as untargeted, ineffective development aid. So all we have to do is reallocate these funds and we get re-migration for free. Dr. Kummel's modified Sachs plan is a two-way, give-and-take, workable initiative. The to give is the targeted aid, but under strict conditions, the take back is the repatriation of grateful migrants with dignity. You have now heard Dr. Komal's modified Sachs Plan strategy for the first time in English, and you have heard it first at Patriotic Alternative.
Thank you. So just to tell you that I've printed out for each one of you, and I'd like to hand it to each one of you, the modified Sachs plan, so that you will be able to examine it for yourself and prepare a list, I hope, of all the people that you can send it to before we get the URL of the film that will be produced, so that then you will be able to more easily send it out. So thank you very much for your attention. Thank you very much.
Thank you.